Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. What if moving the beginning of high school classes from 7:30 to 8:30 could increase standardized test scores, improve graduation rates, lower juvenile crime rates, reduce teen accidents, improve overall physical and mental health? A host of scientific studies indicate that is exactly what would happen. But what about parents who have to get their children to the bus or to school and get themselves to work on time? And what would a later end of school day mean for students who play sports, work on the plays, participate in other extracurriculars? And what would it cost to redesign the school transportation system? These are the sorts of questions that parents, students, and administrators of high school students in Cincinnati Public Schools have been juggling. I'm joined now by the director of neuropsychology, the neuropsychology program at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, Dr. Dean Beebe. Welcome. Pediatric psychologist Dr. Monica Mitchell is also at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center. Board of Education member Eve Bolton can view this not only from a policy perspective as a board member, but she has taught high school for 35 years before joining the board. And Walnut Hills senior Jerisa Anderson, who writes for the student newspaper, The Chatterbox, she will be joining us in a few minutes as we go along. She's still in class right now and has to join us on the line. If you would like to join this conversation, please call us at 513-419-7100 or email talk at WVXU. We are also on Twitter and Facebook. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And Eve, I want to start with you. And I don't want you to have your board member hat on right away. Put your teacher hat back on. All those years at Wyoming High School, were there times when you were teaching, and I'm not sure what time your first bell was, your first class, were there times that you were saying to yourself in the midst of a class, oh my gosh, these guys are not awake yet, and they're not ready to do what I want them to do?
Oh, more than once a week, for sure. But the reality for us there is I believe our first bell was 7:45, and then the class began at 7:50. And that's what I remember for 30-some years. And you'd have five classes or six classes, depending upon the year. And yes, the first class, there were sleepyheads, and it was harder to get dialogue started and discussion, especially in a social studies class. And then also after school, I did the theater program, as you may recall, and indeed, you have to start to worrying about the extracurricular. How late do the rehearsals go if you're going to have a later start? So I have that perspective that I am bringing to the table, to the board, and have great questions about a number of ways we can approach this, because I don't think there's any argument about the science. It's much more about the logistics and how we can handle this.
Well, let's get some science clarified here at the beginning, because you've been living with this and talking with us, talking about it for some time now. So, Dr. Beebe, it's asserted in the literature that I've been able to take a look at that teenagers' brains are simply different than young children or adult brains. And they require first off, we know teenagers' brains are different on lots of levels. But in this particular situation, they need more sleep and more predictable, regular sleep. Why is that? What's going on in a teenage brain?
Well, they absolutely need more sleep than they're getting, to be sure. It's not necessarily true that they need more than a younger child, but they appear to need more than adults. The recommendations across three different groups are that teenagers on a regular basis, not just weekends, not just holidays, but every night, including school nights, get between 8 and 10 hours of sleep per night. Now, the average in the United States is about 7 hours. And what you see then is an accumulation over time of sleep debt. Now, why is that? Well, there's lots of causes. Sleep is constrained on two sides, when you go to sleep and when you wake up. What we see with teenagers is a definite shift in sleep. And that seems to be hardwired in the brain. The biggest change that we can see is the sleep phase shifts. And what we mean by that is when you sleep relative to the time on the clock. If you were to take the middle of the sleep period as a single sort of measure of that, so if you slept midnight to 8 a.m., that would be 4 a.m., and you plotted that across age, that peaks in late adolescence. So 8 a.m. to a late adolescent is like 7:30, 7, maybe even 6:30 compared to an adult. So if you're asking a child to be performing at 7:30 a.m., which is when some of the high schools start here in Cincinnati, we're talking about the equivalent in the brain of somewhere around 6 a.m., which I don't know too many adults who would feel comfortable with a job that everyone had to do that started at that hour.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things to keep in mind here. Any one person can be a morning person or a evening person. I happen to be a morning person. I don't need to set an alarm. I'm going to wake up between 5:30 and 6, and I do my best work, and I'm useless after 9 o'clock at night. So, but my wife is very much the opposite of that. She's a night person. So there can be individual patterns, but you're talking about as a group of people, teenagers have a certain built-in need and necessity for this sort of 8 to 10 hours of sleep.
Yes, and the teenagers are far more like your wife than they are like you. And that happens not just in humans. It actually happens across species.
That's said by a lot of things. Okay. Dr. Mitchell, looking at the studies that have been done, the academic impact of moving the start time, you know, to 8:30 or later is basically the standard that people are talking about. And that there's a significant impact in terms of test scores. 2 points, 2 percentile in math, 1 percentile in reading, vocabulary, that sort of thing. Is that significant? Is that a significant academic gain?
Well, excuse me. I think it can. I mean, I think it can be. I think the test scores are one part of it. As Ms. Bolton mentioned, the science also talks about, you know, decreases in crashes and improved mood. So there are other benefits as well.
Okay. In fact, I find some of the most compelling information in terms of some of these studies is the impact on mood, that a lack of sleep leads to more depression, more stress. And I think a lot of teenagers, you know, really reflect this sense of stress, that they're under pressure all the time to and not getting enough sleep, and they want to tell you how much work they have to do and whatever. And I believe them. I mean, it's just there is that sense of the mental health side of this, not just the physical health side of this, that's important.
Correct. And some of the stress obviously is related to a lack of sleep, and some of the stress is not related to a lack of sleep. So, yes.
I think from the, I shall say, the board's perspective, as I understand it, this as an argument, as something to pursue, is much more along the line to your point about a positive school culture and the overall health of the kids, rather than necessarily the compelling data that, you know, about this point or that decimal point going up on a reading or a math test. It really is more about health. And at CPS, we're very, very involved with that, as you know, and have to concentrate greatly on the whole child and the overall wellness of the kid.
We asked people yesterday to send us questions. And one woman wrote in, she didn't leave her name, but she wrote in, she said, and this is sort of a variation that I hadn't thought about. And she said, I absolutely think school should start later in high school. And I also think that weekend testing of high schoolers have to do, I think she's probably talking about college preparatory testing, should be started at a later time. I see no reason why they have to start so early when teens are not at their best. So just when we measure students by starting it so early in the morning may be skewing scores as well. I thought that was an interesting point.
It does raise the possibility that what you're doing is you're biasing things against some kids beyond a tipping point. The issue is not that everyone collapses into a heap when they're under stress. The issue is that there are wide variation of stress, and those where you have the most vulnerable individuals and you're systematically inducing more. And it is true that some stress is from school, some stress is from sports, some stress is social. We know that we can induce this. In fact, that's what we do at Children's in the research that I do, is we actually have sleep manipulations. And we know that these are cause-effect relationships. You can create a person who's much moodier. You can create a person who's much less attentive simply by reducing the amount of sleep they get to about the amount that many teens get on a regular basis. Mm. And you can alleviate that, even in chronically short-sleeping teens, by having them get more sleep.
So that's the sort of work that you're doing yourself at Children's Hospital here in Cincinnati.
Right.
So I think there's also a question here that there's that 2-percentile score on math, 1-percentile on reading. But there's also indications that students lower income – coming from poverty areas, that they could benefit even more. And therefore, the result of this could be a reducing of the gap that we're all concerned about in terms of performance and expectation. That, in effect, it seems to me what the study is saying, sleep, the lack of sleep is sort of piling on some on top of other issues. Is that true?
I think we have to look at delayed start times within a larger context. And certainly income is one of the contexts that we need to consider. But I think we also have to think about some of the impacts, both positive and negative. As my colleagues have said, the science is strong that it's important that students get more sleep. I'd like to also mention some of the other things that we do have to consider as we implement a policy like this. So one of the things is, I think you mentioned in your intro, sports and extracurricular activities. I think the way that students think about this and parents think about this is, hey, school's starting later, school's getting out later. Games and matches are starting later, I'm getting home later. So I think we have to think about and be sensitive to, you know, how are we going to transition the not only the start of school, but also the fact that everything's moving back in another hour. I think some other issues that relate specifically to your question about low-income families is low-income families are more likely to work after school. And low-income families, and this has been documented by the National Sleep Foundation, as they cite on their website some of the challenges to delay of start, school start times, they're disproportionately impacted potentially by delay of start times because they are more likely to work after school. There was a recent study done by the city of Cincinnati focusing on youth in Cincinnati, and we know that over 20% of students who are low-income work after school. So this is something else we have to be sensitive to as well. The other thing with low-income families is they're more likely to watch siblings after school. Yeah. So, again, these are some things I think we have to consider.
All of those things have to be balanced.
Yes.
Can I interject real quickly? With regard to the vulnerability question, it's actually a really interesting question. There are some folks who've bothered to look at it when they've looked at changing school start times. Many haven't, but those who have generally found benefits that are either equivalent or slightly greater in the most disadvantaged populations. For example, graduation rates or continuity within from year to year within the same school. The data are not the cleanest data in the world. I'm a scientist, I always question things. But what little evidence we have is in the direction of later school start times being more beneficial than harmful for those kids. And in my own data, the lower income the family, the more likely that sleep phase is later. So in fact, if that is a key mechanism here for shortening sleep because of early school start times, that might be the biological mechanism.
Well, the good news here is that we are now able to be joined by, although, Jerisa, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good. Jerisa Anderson is a senior at Walnut Hills High School and works on the Chatterbox, the student newspaper. And I want to say, just before I get to you, Jerisa, that we did a very unscientific poll of our viewers yesterday, asking them to chime in on this. And 76 people said they thought the start time ought to be moved back. And 11 said they didn't think it should be moved back. You did a poll at Walnut Hills High School as well. Is that correct?
Yes.
And what did that show?
Well, we actually had about 416 students answer the survey. It was voluntary. And we had about 65% of the school who was in favor of a later school start time. And most of those students were younger students in grades 7 through 9.
So the younger students were even more interested than the older students. Why do you think that was?
Well, I know from my standpoint as a senior, a lot of seniors have been through starting school at an early time. And so we're used to it, and we feel like, well, not we, but a lot of us feel like the younger students should have to do the same thing. But younger students are just more opposed to starting earlier.
Okay. So you're hearing it from the younger students, even though by the time you get to be seniors, you've been ruined already and you're used to you're used to doing it. So you've written in the chatterbox about this. What kind of reaction did you get from your fellow students to your article that where you pretty much come out and argue for an early start time?
Yeah, a lot of people are actually in favor of it too. So they agreed mostly with what I was saying. But a lot of people were not in favor of it because of extracurriculars. A lot of people at WANA are involved in school activities after school. A lot of people play sports where practice can go from anywhere between like 3:30 to maybe 6:30. And so a lot of those students were against a later school time.
Yeah, if you're in a play, practice can go very late for that. Yeah. Those are all issues that have to be worked out, which gets us back to Eve Bolton, who serves on the Board of Education. Eve, what are some – we can talk about those sorts of practical concerns of moving the end time back that students can see or that parents may have raised. But what about – there's economic impacts here too. They're very practical that you have to deal with.
Yes, and that is a big concern. And, you know, I don't ever like to start any issue saying this is almost impossible, but it will be very difficult. Now, the reality is we really only, out of our 14 high schools, only really have to change about 7 of them, particularly to meet that 8:30 piece. So that's important. That's very important to understand. But it's also important that the state does not require us to transport any high school student. They do require us to transport K-8 students, and indeed we do transport K-8, and through Metro we do transport the high school students. And the reality there is that out of a $600 million general fund budget, about $60 million is spent on transportation because we do not charge our children or their families. For good reason. We want them there. And we also do more than the state requires in that if you live beyond, the state only says if you live beyond 2 miles, we can transport K-8 and you don't have to transport high school at all. Well, we transport all our children from 1 mile in. So the reality is, the 1 mile is what we use. And for high school, it's 1.25 mile because we want our kids there. And our kids, with 70% free and reduced lunch, let's say, a lot of our kids don't have the same kinds of transportation opportunities that many suburban districts do. And they do have many more logistical issues. So it's a financial piece because Metro currently does not have the capacity to transport our high school kids if we started all much later, because
is it the fact that they're staggered right now that allows Metro?
Yes.
But if they all started after 8:30,
right?
What could you just stagger them so it was? Some would start at 8:30. They'd start at different times between 8:30 and 9?
You can do that, and we do it. There's really three kind of segments to our transportation piece, and it is the staggered even within those three. But then it runs up against the rush hour in the morning and runs against the rush hour in the evening because we have dedicated, so to speak, routes, 160 some of them. But other people get to get on those buses, too, because it's against federal law for us to only have at Metro students being transported. So it's a very difficult thing to work out. And they've estimated they would have to increase their fleet and increase the garage. Well, that becomes financially impossible.
And what's the estimate there? I've seen different estimates, and I'm not quite sure what to read.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that the first estimate they did in response to the community's request and the board requesting it was the worst case scenario. Everybody starting at the same time, which then meant it was $50 to $100 million more
because
they'd have
that.
To buy bus, and that's not going to happen. So what we really need to do and what we've asked them is to do a staggered again where you're really taking care of those schools that we need to take care of from a standpoint if they already start so early. And then from that point, keep in mind, too, this currently, the transportation line item is almost unsustainable as it is for us. So you could also start repurposing some of the dollars we already spend. But there are many transportation issues that might impact achievement and health even more. So that's going to be part of the issue.
So given that, what Eve has just said, what do you propose?
Well, the good news is there's actually a lot of folks working on this. And to Cincinnati Public's credit, they're taking a very careful approach. There have been community sessions. There was the school survey, but there's also a recent community survey that has just closed. I don't know that the results have been crunched on that. But they're looking at lots of possibilities around busing as well.
So we still think there's possibility here.
Yeah. That the worst case scenario will not happen.
Last point, when do you have to make a decision?
Well, we have to submit a report to the board by the end of this month, and then we have to put things in place at that time, probably not for next year, but the following year.
I want to thank all of my guests who have been here on Cincinnati Edition today, and particularly recognize producer Pete Reitmeier, Selena Reeder, technical director Josh Elstro, and stay tuned on 91.7 for Here and Now, coming up next.